Hey, Confidant, it's Teresa, your girl, the High Priestess. This is the podcast where our comedians confess something they've never told anyone before. You guys know what it is. You guys are here every week, and I love it. I love you guys. If you haven't given me a review yet, I would totally love a 5-star review. Go to your iTunes app, your Apple Podcasts, whatever you use, 5 stars, write a review. I guess if you have something terrible to say, maybe message that to me and don't put it on iTunes or do whatever you want. But you can message me. This is all to say. You can message me. TellMeAnythingPod@gmail.com or on Instagram @TellMeAnythingPod. But you guys know me. You know me. I'm Teresa Lee. I'm at Larissa T. So I know you know me because I get your messages. So you can also reach me that way. But I do check all of those. Look, I love to have many lines of communication. It's just, you know, you could call it my kink, communicating. Anyways, speaking of announcements, just want to let you guys know we have something exciting coming up, some big news on the horizon, so look out for that. But in the meantime, if you want to be on my Super Confidant newsletter, you can send $5 or more to paypal.me/youcantellmeanything. Thank you to all the Super Confidants who have already contributed this month. Shout out, what? It basically, if you do it before the 5th of the month, I'll include you on the newsletter going out the following month. So usually that goes out the week after the 5th. So that should be coming out in just a few days. And I love to connect with you guys. I send photos, videos, usually write out a personal message, and it's a lot of fun because it's a way for me to tell you guys a little bit more about what's going on in my life that I don't share with the whole world. Whew, this is a very long intro, and I swear it's almost over. But you know what? I wanted to try reading a listener confession on the podcast in the intro, and sometimes we do them on the episode and with a guest, but this episode particularly, we did not, and I got this message, and I wanted to address it. So, here is the listener confession. It's a bit long. I'm going to read it, and I will leave out any names. Hi, I deliberately walked around my workplace, a 700,000 square foot warehouse, because I knew the people I'd encounter would compliment how I look today. I am one of the senior managers in the building. The more I thought about it, hearing the compliments make me feel bad because I fish for them and I am in no close relation to those who said them. Lately, I've been feeling lonely because there seems to be many reminders of that recently. I've had confidence and self-esteem issues in the past, but I've gotten much better. My confidence is higher and my self-esteem is better than ever compared to 10 years ago. However, I still cannot maintain a meaningful, intimate, and loving relationship with a person of the opposite sex, let alone initiate one. My confidence in myself allows me to take that notion in stride, since I think that I'll be able to focus on myself even more and will be a better person to special someone in the future. But the reason for the loneliness recently is that I've been thinking about my situation a lot, .. And then in parentheses says, please take this with a grain of salt since you don't know me and I don't expect you to believe me. Okay, end parentheses. Despite having a close and supportive network of family and friends, and despite being told how positive, altruistic, funny, focused, and loving I am, I can't get a girlfriend. I can't get second dates. I've never had a girlfriend in my 28 years on earth. I've never been more than one date with the same person. The not getting a second date part is the root of it to me, since it's such a simple explanation for not having a significant other. No second date, no progress on the relationship to advance. Should I ask my dates to be my girlfriend on the first date? Haha, just kidding. Okay, you got me there. But for real, I'm taking it in stride. I'm keeping a my time will come mindset. I'm focused on my career, but when should I start to worry? Thanks, Teresa. I love your podcast and the work that you do. Wow. Well, first of all, thank you so much for sharing this. And I actually think this is probably quite relatable for a lot of people, but being in this position can feel very lonely, of course, because I think you're seeking something outside of yourself, and it feels like this thing that's far away that you want. And the more you think about it, the harder it is to get, because I think, well, I'm not a relationship expert, but I can tell you about my experience. I didn't have a relationship till very late in my life. I remember even going through college and everyone had boyfriends and I hadn't. And I remember feeling just like, am I doing something wrong? I feel like I, you know, have these first dates or have these interesting experiences and then it never goes anywhere, right? That's kind of what you're talking about. I can tell you a couple of things. I definitely hear you saying like the word getting a second date or getting a girlfriend. I think that's definitely a thing that you might want to consider reframing. I think thinking of this girlfriend as this girlfriend you don't have and don't know as something you're trying to get can limit yourself because you're sort of seeking this like object, which, you know, girlfriends are not objects. They're people. They're people seeking other things from you as well. It's sort of a two-way street. You're both people. And if it works, a relationship that's healthy is two people who can support each other, love each other, give each other what the other needs and grow together. So that being said, it's not necessarily going to feel like this is someone I got and then she's mine and she'll never leave, because that doesn't happen. Even if she says she'll be your girlfriend, let's say she says it on a first date, she could still leave. It might not work. So what you're really seeking is a connection. You really are looking to connect to someone in a way that makes you feel safe and secure and like willing to build something with them. And this is just my guess, but I think it's hard to make a connection if you're constantly thinking of them as this prize you have to get, because then you're kind of running your head through like, is this person checking off boxes, rather than just listening and being present and experiencing a relationship. And you know, if over and over you're not getting second dates, like you say, and you feel like you're putting in a lot of effort and that you're a catch and all that, it's worth in exploring. Like, first of all, do you know what you want? Second of all, are you opening yourself up to things outside of that? It's definitely just like, look at your own patterns, you know? Are you going for people who are unavailable because you're not really quite available? These are all things that aren't easy, but over time, you definitely can develop patterns, and it's good to look at that. I know for a fact, I used to think that I was always going for unavailable people. And I always thought I was putting in my all and that I love very deeply and like I didn't understand. And then over time I looked back and I was like, well, I must be giving off symbols that I'm also unavailable. And I was, you know, I was. I was letting things slide that shouldn't have been okay if I was seeking a relationship, which I was. So once I realized that, I shifted my actions and everything changed. Anyways, there's no one-stop shop. There's no one solution. But you seem like a very self-aware person who's done a lot of self-reflection and, you know, you have a job. You are able to, you're cultured. You listen to me. but no, I'm serious. You seem like a very smart person. And so I don't think this is something you need to go too deep and think like, what's wrong with me? Nothing's wrong with you. 28. Is a perfectly fine age to have never been in a serious relationship. Look, we're told that you're supposed to do this, you're supposed to do that. You're not. You spend a lot of time building your life, building your interests. I think that's great. You'll meet the right person. But I would say definitely reframe your thinking in terms of like trying to get something that other people have, because some people in relationships are trying to get something you have, the job, the self-awareness. So work more on connecting to people and finding that sort of feeling with other people before you try to force a label onto things. That's my advice. Well, thanks so much for listening to that. I went on for a bit. And you know what? I'll see how I feel about doing these at the beginning. I kind of think it might be fun to continue doing these with a guest. So again, you can email me your confession if you'd like me to talk about it on the podcast, or if you want it anonymous, I can also respond directly to you without reading it on the podcast. That's been the intro. I'm really excited to introduce the guest. She's really wonderful. She's from San Francisco and she's soon to be a Los Angeles citizen, but very funny comedian. Open for Amy Poehler at Clusterfest. We have Nori Reed. Enjoy. You can tell her. You can tell. Hey guys, it's Teresa. You're listening to You Can Tell Me Anything. This is the podcast where comedians confess something they've never told anyone before. It is a comedy podcast, also sometimes therapy. It's whatever you want it to be. I know it's pretty much therapeutic for me, but I'm really excited for my guest today. She's actually visiting from my hometown, the Bay Area. She's down here just visiting in LA, so I had to get her on. She's going to be performing at the All Jane Comedy Fest in Portland, and she has a monthly show in Oakland called Man Haters. It's Nori Reed.
Hi.
What's up? I paused before Oakland because I always just want to refer to the entire Bay Area as San Francisco, and then yeah. I've noticed like the past couple times you made a face. The past couple times I've gone back, like, people get a little salty when I do that. I'm like, oh, that's right. Oakland is different. It's just because I grew up in the South Bay. And then when I went to New York, I just tell people I'm from San Francisco because it's easier.
Yeah, it's changed. Things have changed. It's different. It's so different.
It's like a battle. It's a war.
Yeah.
Do you guys feel like a lot of like rivalry with San Francisco?
I think San Francisco right now represents like so much.
Sure.
Like that maybe it's just like maybe less cool to say that. Like, mm-hmm. it's so much cooler to be like Oakland.
It's like saying Brooklyn instead of Manhattan. Yeah, it used to just be New York, and now it's like, well, there's like Sex in the City, New York.
Mm-hmm.
Brooklyn's also very like douchey now, but
yeah,
it's just a different vibe.
I think it's just a different vibe, and it's like a cooler
vibe. It is cooler. Is the comedy like that differentiated too? You think?
Yeah,
it
is. I do. Okay.
So
I think
it's like Oakland comedy versus San Francisco comedy.
Yeah. Well, I think that. I understand at least that back in the day there was more of an alt comedy scene,
uh-huh.
and because of like tech gentrification, yeah, let's get political. Let's talk about it. Let's talk about it. The alt comedy scene kind of left in San Francisco, uh-huh. because it just, you know, that's how that works. And I guess Oakland now kind of, at least for me, represents kind of like that alt comedy scene.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I could see that for sure. Yeah. I think your show is like my favorite show that I've done in the Bay.
Thank you.
It's a great show. Well, I like to start with a good confession to start on a positive note. Is there something good you'd like to confess?
Yeah. I think my confession is that I like LA.
Ooh. Ooh, that is great.
I know. It's like, oh my God.
And you've only just started. I feel like you've come down here before, right?
For like a quick. This is my first real.
But you're doing
LA
like now
trip.
You're like doing the meetings and stuff.
Yes,
you're coming
meetings.
Down.
Meetings. Yeah. Oh my God.
Yeah. And that's great. And that's really wonderful. I feel like it's like a cool thing to hate LA. If that makes sense. Like,
oh
it's,
no.
Yeah.
I'm all again that cool Oakland vibe. I'm like, oh, LA. Like, wow. Like, no. And then I kind of like it. Yeah.
I had that when I lived in New York. And it's weird to think about it now because now I live here, but LA did feel like this. I don't know why we hated it. I had never spent any time doing comedy there. I just knew that I hated it. And there was this feeling of like, ugh, like this person's from LA on this show. No wonder they're bad. And now I'm like, why did we were just so salty. Like,
it's funny because last night I did Faded Comedy, mm-hmm. which was great. And I said I was a Bay Area comic and people in the crowd like wooed and were like happy. And it was such a strange moment. It was so unexpected because I feel like in the Bay, if you talk about LA, people are like, boo. And I just felt, I was like, wow. I was like, this whole time, LA's just been loving us. And
yeah, LA loves everyone.
We're not returning the love. It's fucked up.
LA likes New York too. I mean, I feel like when New York comics come visit, LA loves them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Everyone just hates LA. I think it's because we give, like, I will say LA's like image is very like, what I associate with like Instagram influencers, like it's a little bit fake. It's not fake because they're trying to trick you. It's fake mm-hmm. because everybody is going to have good and bad. And LA people just choose to like focus on the good, you know, I don't know. And I mean, truly it nauseates me because I feel like I used to be like, oh, fuck that. Like, don't be happy. Just own the sadness. But now I'm like, oh, I'm so sorry that I decided to be happy and
I am. Know. Who has the
so
time?
So sorry.
Who has the time to be sad? I just, you know, I can't. I'm too busy. I'll just bury it in an acai bowl and figure it out.
Yeah, I have a dog. I dye my hair blonde. I mean, like, come on.
By the way, I love your hair.
Oh, thank you so much. I know you're saying you're thinking of going blonde.
I'm thinking about going back.
You look so good. Wait, have you been blonde before?
I have been blonde.
Oh, my goodness. It just burns so bad. It hurts.
And like, it's hard.
When I was in, were you like full blonde?
Yeah.
When I was in the chair, like, my scalp is so sensitive and it was, and I know it hurts because I've done it before, but it's always like just more pain than I remember.
Yeah.
And I remember just like thinking, the worst of it only lasts for like about 2 minutes, but it's pretty bad 2 minutes. And I was just thinking like, this isn't worth it. I'm never going to do this again. I don't know. I think about that because I think about like looking at like traditionally hot models on mm-hmm. Instagram and I'm always like, oh, like if I just, you know, made this my project or whatever. Maybe I could like get plastic surgery and try to look like them. But then just the slightest burn on my scalp, I'm like, oh no, I kind of admire these girls. They really, like, I don't value that to the point where I would go through that much pain. And they're probably constantly suffering.
So much pain. It's like so much pain.
Much respect for the hot girls, more respect for the hot girls who go through pain to look hot. Like
the Fashion Nova girls.
Insane. Yeah. They all of the work you get done. I'm like, mm-hmm. we shouldn't be judging work. I mean, we should, because they're for sure giving us the wrong ideals. But also, like, if you break down their existence, they're in pain. They're in a lot of pain.
That is like very like white feminism, right? To like look down on women who perform femininity and things like that. But also, I feel like just going blonde for the fall is like so subversive.
Yeah, because it's not what we chose.
Yeah, because you're like, you think it's like summertime, but it's like, no, bitch, it's fall and I'm going to go blonde. There's something cool about that.
I did also go through a breakup, and I do want people to see my pain. So
we'll see. I think that's great, because maybe it's like you don't feel the sadness, but you want to show.
Yes, you want to show it. Yeah. Summertime sadness, fall time, whatever the opposite of.
She's back.
Yeah. She's back. She is.
Yeah.
She has did you see the collab with Ariana and Miley for Charlie's Angels?
Are you kidding me?
She's not that good on it, but it's a cool music video because all three of them are in it.
And they're all in pain.
They are all in pain.
Three women in pain. I'm so excited. Love a woman in pain.
Sad women in pain. Yeah.
Yeah.
That is the thing. Yeah. Anyways. So this podcast is sort of inspired by therapy and like getting things off your chest.
Love therapy.
So you go to therapy.
Yes.
Did you always go to therapy like growing up, or was it something
No, I did not go growing up because, my mom is Korean. Mm-hmm. So talk about no time for sadness. That's
for sure. They just don't believe in it. My mom was the same way. She would get upset. I remember specifically one time her emailing me an article from Stanford, no less, like the Stanford, whatever, science journal or something, about how like therapy might be like doing more harm than good. Yeah. And she was like, see? And I'm like, okay, great.
Like, and Stanford's like the Bible, right? Like for Korean people, I guess. Right.
No, that's when they went, but.
I started in college when I kind of like broke away from my, like mm-hmm. where I grew up.
Where did you go to school?
I went to college in Kenyon College in Ohio, like a liberal arts kind of a situation.
Cool. Yeah, I've heard of it.
Yeah. And
It
was a situation. And I think like Oberlin, but like, I guess like more outward money or something. Uh-huh. I don't know. And so a lot of the kids are LA kids and New York kids. I am from Kentucky, from like a small farm town, literally called Christian County.
Oh, really? And wow. I know. Were you Christian?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Like it's in the name, like Pentecostal. Southern Baptist, like a mix of those two. Wow. It was a lot. And so when I got to this like liberal ass campus with like all of these liberal people, and I just had essentially like a nervous breakdown and was asked to,
you were escorted to the
therapist. Yeah, let's get real here. I was polite. It's not like there was no escorting.
Suggested.
It was a strong suggestion that I reach out to the counseling center. And that was my first introduction to therapy. Yeah.
Oh, wow. You said it's very liberal and it was mm-hmm. like a culture shock. Were you aware of that? And were you like seeking something different, or were you like very much still drinking the Kool-Aid of your town?
You know, I'm a queer person, and mm-hmm. I feel like as a queer person, it's always somewhere, right? It's like, you know, maybe if you don't even know how to interact with it, or if you can't name it, it's still like a shape or like a feeling or something. I don't know. I clearly have been to therapy. It's in there.
And you pull out a picture that you're like, it looks like this. I drew it in therapy.
Exactly. It's mm-hmm. like a pyramid shape. Yeah. But yeah, of course. Yeah. I think for me, academics was like a way to get out of Kentucky.
Yeah.
Like I knew that if I did well, then I could maybe like escape. So mm-hmm. yeah, I think I was seeking that, but still, even with that like desire, the practice of it was mm-hmm. overwhelming and too much. Yeah.
Well, can you think of specific things that you were like, whoa, I like, this is very liberal compared to what I've grown up with? Or just, was it just like everybody had mm-hmm. a different set of ideals, or was it specific things that people were into?
So much Patagonia. It was like, I mean, I never even like knew that was a brand. And I was just like, what is this? The
liberal uniform.
Yeah. I was like, there's all of this Patagonia. Like I don't even know where that is.
It's also a very specific type of liberal. It's like the wealthy. Wealthy. Like Bay Area. It's very much, it's like, it's like privileged, educated, but also thinks they're better than you because they voted Democrat.
Absolutely. It was like that kind of crowd of just like very hyper educated, very hyper, just, you know, really top rich people. And so it was just a culture shock in terms of coming from like a very working class family. And and yeah, like in terms of liberal stuff, I just mean, I went to a Christian school my whole life up until that point. And we literally taught creationism in science class. We literally put post-it notes over the genitals
in
art history. This is real life.
That's like, almost like more like suggestive, I feel, like to cover something up.
I know.
Because then you're like, what's under there? And that's all you're looking at.
And post-it notes are removable. So it's like, you're like, hey, that there's a penis under here. And need to look at it.
I can't imagine. Yeah. Imagine like teaching like human anatomy or something. And you're like, I have to cover this. And then people just grow up thinking that there's nothing there. And then how scary to see, like if you've never seen like a penis or something, and how scary to see it, like a full grown penis, because you haven't seen a picture of it. And you're like, I thought there was nothing there.
I know. And you thought, you just think it's a post-it note.
It's a post-it note.
And then there's no post-it note. And it's kind of meta because the British like took off the penises from the Roman statues.
Oh.
Yeah. Like she studied art history. Okay.
She
knows.
She went to liberal arts college.
Listen. The therapy worked. I very much, I'm rich now. And the British, they took off the penises, and they still put like post-it notes over the like removed.
Oh, really?
So I was just like, this is like a two negatives make up. I don't know. I was very confused.
I feel like they should cover a different part of the body to like, it's like classic misdirection. Like, what if they just covered the bicep and then everyone's like, ooh, what's going on there? Everybody's focused on biceps. You're not even looking down there.
You don't see it. And they didn't cover the buttocks or the
boobs.
The boobs.
They
didn't. So it was just like.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, I don't know.
Opposite of TV censorship, I feel like.
Yeah. And then I went to liberal arts college and all the penises. And I was just like, oh my God, there's penises on these statues. I would just, it was a lot.
Were you like part of student organizations at your college?
Yeah, I like this. This feels like an interview. I'm really, cause I love this. It's like, did I get the job at Twitter?
Did
like,
very Bay Area reference there.
Yes. That is a reference. I was in this Archon, it's called Archon Society. And it was a gender neutral society. So it's like a fraternity, but it's for
all for anybody. Genders.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
And so, Was it great.
Like you guys had a house and there's like all that? Oh, cool.
We had a house and then we did the focus of the organization was community service.
Oh, great.
And so I just want to let everyone, I'm a very good person.
I'm
rich.
Like you're bragging there, Nori. Yeah. No.
I'm like, who's the queen? Who's the princess that just had a baby?
What's her name? Meghan Markle? No.
That's me.
Does she have a baby? Yeah. She did have a baby.
Yeah, I'm rich. I'm nice. I'm for the people. it was a great experience, that thing.
Oops. That was my computer. Ooh. Oops. Oops. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, I want to ask you, Nori, is there anything you'd like to tell me?
Oh, well, I guess there is. I mean, I have a confession. Since we are talking about Kentucky, we're talking about these things. I did not fully, truly understand how to use chopsticks until I was like 11 years old.
Okay. And your parents are mixed.
Yes. My mom is Korean.
Uh-huh.
And my dad is mixed. He's Irish and Cherokee.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I took a second. I was like, Korean people use chopsticks, and I was like, of course they do. Mm-hmm. But for some reason, my mind. I actually didn't eat Korean food till I was like in college. I don't think. Well, no, I've had Korean barbecue, but I feel like that in Hollywood we still used to be like all Asians in one category. But growing up in the Bay Area, it's like there's all these little pockets.
Yeah,
and they're very different.
And there's no real Korean. There doesn't feel like there's like. There is Korean people in the Bay, obviously, and there is community, but there's no like Koreatown.
Yeah, not the way it is down here.
Yeah,
there's way more Korean food down here.
Mm-hmm.
So you didn't learn to use chopsticks till you were 11. Was it? Did you try and then give up, or was your household like very much just not even culturally Korean?
I'm sorry. I had Chick-fil-A. I'm just going to be open with you. I had Chick-fil-A.
Get out of here. This is a hate reflux. Crime. I feel. No, I'm just kidding.
If I can't have it, who can?
No, you know what? This is going to get me canceled.
I'm scared.
This is brave to say, but I also eat Chick-fil-A. But I specifically go to the one in Hollywood. Mm-hmm. I just feel like that one does support. I've definitely met gay employees there. Definitely supports working actors. I feel like I'm doing community service when I go there. It's a lot of actors.
Yeah.
You know, I'm paying for their headshots. I just feel like I'm doing philanthropy.
It's true. And the way I feel is the service is so good that it makes you realize the positives of Christian values. Because they're so nice and wonderful and lovely that you're like, listen, maybe you hate gay people. Maybe you don't support abortion. You are so nice and lovely. And it's confusing. It's very confusing.
It's also like I think notoriously they've definitely not done themselves any favors by talking about how much they hate gay people up top. But they talk about as a company, like most companies, the top people are bad. They're just know better than to show their face
absolutely
in public.
I think they got too bold because the chicken is so good.
It's so good
that they were like, listen, we hate gay people, and they were expecting people to be like, well, the chicken is so good, which I guess is happening.
Trojan horse in their values. Yeah. But also the thing is, I don't think there's anybody who's like, I love Chick-fil-A, therefore I will also hate gay people with you. Like, it's not them doing that. It's actually people. Not changing anyone. If anything, more people are hearing that and being like, if they were ambivalent before, being like, maybe I shouldn't hate gay people because of all the gay people who are mad at Chick-fil-A. Also Chick-fil-A's good. Like, it's only pushing people to the other side, I feel like. I don't know if that's true. That's not scientific.
I have a double confession. It's okay. That I love Chick-fil-A and I'm a bad
tea.
Asian.
Oh my gosh. Yeah,
bad queer, bad Asian.
Bad queer, bad Asian.
Oh my God.
There's a podcast called Bad Asians.
Yes.
David Nguyen from the Bay Area.
I know.
Anyways. So you had Chick-fil-A. This is not related to the...
Sorry, let me go
see.
This is a double... This is a special double episode.
No, this is all related. So you don't follow rules. You're a rebel.
I'm a rebel.
You like to walk your own path. And that, if anything, that actually makes you a better queer, a better Asian, because you're
an
individual and you're not trying to go with the pack.
Wow.
Do you see how I spun this? I should be a politician.
You should be either a manager, because I've met with industry all week, and they will turn anything into a positive. And then, or you, a cult leader, as I also think.
A cult leader.
Yeah.
That is my goal. I'm working on the cult part. So far, I have 20 people in.
How many people listen to podcasts?
That's more than that, but okay. I don't know how many of them would follow me into a cult.
Okay.
Probably not. Yeah. Probably not all of them. Most of them are probably listening in their car. And maybe I'm secretly brainwashing you. Who knows?
Eat Chick-fil-A.
Listen to episode... No, I'm just kidding. Like, listen this order, and it was have a secret message. Okay, so you... You were, we were talking about, was your family like culturally Korean?
Yes. And what happened is, so growing up in Kentucky, my mom, I think, you know, people have different ways of survival.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for her, it very much was like assimilation of just like, you know, she could see the white privilege and the, you know, we grew up in a town with like basically no Asian people. And so my school, I was the only
Asian people love Kentucky Fried Chicken.
I know.
I don't know if that's the thing we talk about enough, but I feel like, my growing up, and it's called kendaji, right, in Chinese.
I don't speak
Chinese.
I'm sorry. Yeah,
kendaji. So that's what we used to call it, and all the time we just have it
they
at everything
do.
But then I asked my mom, I'm like, is it really from Kentucky? And she's like, I don't think so, because I went to Kentucky and I had it and it tastes the same as everywhere else.
Yeah,
I was disappointed.
Yeah, I mean, fried chicken is all in my, it's in my genes. Mm-hmm. I'm like from Kentucky. It's like everywhere I look, it's in the
but there's
sign.
No Asian people in not
no,
Kentucky.
And growing up in my school, I was the only Asian person, basically.
Wow.
And it was like, it was bad. I mean, there was one other Asian girl, but we weren't even in the same school. She was in like the way, way lower grades.
Uh-huh.
But it was a very white, very small Bible town. And so for her, it was about, you know, making me like a good white person.
Did your mom do, or how does she end up there?
So there's a military base there.
Okay.
And that's really why there are these interracial kind of relationships, because white people, you know, they buy people. And I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding.
I was like, wait, what?
My dad did not purchase my mom. But they're, you know, imperialism, military, that kind of stuff. And so they got married. They moved to this weird... this is what's fucked up. Okay, let me break this up. What's so fucked up is that they could have... From the army base, Fort Campbell, you have two choices of where to live. You can move to this place called Clarksville, which is in Tennessee. It's full of Korean people. it's like a hub. Like, there's just Korean people. It's like amazing. I would have had the best childhood experience. And then you could also then go to Christian County, which is like no Asian people. You know, sad, like, and they chose that.
Wow. It's like in those cartoons when there's like one road that's dark and stormy and one that's like bright with birds. And then someone walks by and flips a sign. So then you're like, the hero's like, this way, I guess. But it's like so clearly the wrong way.
My parents are idiots. That's what I'm trying to say. They're so stupid. And they chose the worst place to raise an Asian child. So, So in our household, we eat a mix of Korean food and American food. But we would use forks and, you know, we didn't use chopsticks. And but then my mom, what happened, this is what happened around 11, is that she wanted to go to Korea.
Okay.
And so that was the inspiration for me learning how to use chopsticks.
Oh, okay. 'Cause
I didn't want to look like a idiot.
Did your mom know how to use chopsticks? Like,
yeah.
Okay. So because you grew up in Korea and then kind of moved.
And she would use them. Like during dinner.
Oh, really?
Yeah, during dinner, she would use chopsticks.
Just like dangling in front of you. Right? Like, sorry, this is a skill you don't have.
I think there's a lot of fucked up stuff that happens when you grow up.
It is tricky. I mean, I know parents are, it's such a hard thing. They're doing their best. They're trying to make it easier for their children as immigrants. But what they don't realize, it's like their experience is going to be totally different because they came here as adults and like kids are just so different.
Yeah.
My mom like never taught me Taiwanese, not necessarily because of that, but I think she sent me to Chinese school and we learned Mandarin and then we learned English and she would speak in Taiwanese on the phone. I still don't know it. I just hear it all the time and she just never taught it to me.
I know it's a very lonely feeling, right? When you hear your mom speak on the phone.
Yeah.
And for me, obviously Korean, and it was just like, I really can't understand what you're saying. It's very disconnecting. Wow. Yeah.
It's so, yeah.
Yeah.
That's interesting. I feel like I remember explaining this to my mom recently, just that weird feeling of the experience of growing up Asian American and how different it is from just being Asian, because you are American. So you grow up with the same, you see the same cultural things happening. This, you know, when Friends is on TV, everybody's talking about it. You're part of that. You see the Beanie Babies, whatever, you know, all that stuff is part of your life and culture. And at the same time, you're also connected to this other culture.
Yeah.
And you're not separating it. So as I've gotten older, I've learned to look back and be like, oh, that thing I probably felt because of this part of my life. And this thing I felt because I was in theater and that's a theater thing or whatever.
I don't want to. I'm so sorry. It was the spicy chicken sandwich.
Are you
okay?
Really spicy. We can take a break.
I'm fine. I just, you know, it's happening. It's interesting.
It's God's wrath.
This is God. This is God. And I get
Christian
it.
Christian County. Where
I
you
get
at?
It. It's funny because it's like, your parents are doing the best they can. I think in her brain, she was thinking that she was helping me in some way. But it very much was hurtful and kind of, you know, disconnecting. You lose a lot when you are separated that way from like half of you, or like you know, like who you are,
and then you feel it, especially being in trying to make it in Hollywood now, where they're like, okay, great, we want Asians. Do you speak this? Can you do martial arts? And I'm like, I was trying to be white.
Yeah, it's like, wait, what? I know. I actually just wrote for. I mean, this is local. It was for this. We have a sketch company in San Francisco called Killing My Lobster. And I wrote for a show called Model Minority Report, and
it was
an all Asian cast, all Asian writers, and it was, you know, it was interesting being in the room because it was like, you know, so much like Asian kind of culture, and I think as a mixed person I definitely almost was feeling I hate the word triggered. I think it's such a stupid I hate that shit, but yeah, I was definitely activated in terms
activated.
Of just
I like
activated,
that
right?
Sounds
activated.
Like some sort of secret powers,
right? My
release the plutonium.
that stuff was definitely touched in terms of just like, oh man, like I don't really get up some of these references, or I don't really, and it just brought me back to that feeling of like, you know, I tried to go to Korean language school. I asked my mom.
You asked. How old were you when you asked?
I think I was probably 15.
Okay.
And I asked if I could at the local Korean church. Guess where? Clarksville.
Ha ha.
Clarksville, bitch.
Oh my God.
I was like, can I go to Clarksville during the summer and take these things, take this class? And it was hard. It was too, because at that point I felt too far away to even begin to try to learn this like language.
Gotcha.
That's not even, what's the word? Is phonetic versus, I don't know that
yes, because it's not words. Using the letters, it's using like,
the image. Yeah. Yeah, it's a completely different language. Much more intuitive, but it's
Slavic. Well, it's from, they're all kind of derived from Arabic.
Yeah.
Right? A lot of the Asian languages.
And Korean is actually the only language, I don't know if this is true, but it's the propaganda that they told us. So in Korean language school, they told us that Korean was created by a person.
Yes, yeah. That is true. But I'll add on to that the propaganda I was told, because I'm Taiwanese Chinese, which is that Korean was created by a person who combined Japanese and Chinese.
That's true. Wait, I forgot the second part. That's so funny.
It's funny. Talk about spinning things. Wow. From one side, it's a point of pride. From the other side, it's a point of pride that we were the originals. So it's which is it?
I feel like that's like Forever 21 being like, look, like we made this. And someone's like, well, you made this from a Philip Lim.
That's
like,
so funny.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, propaganda, whatever you're told. I mean, I was told by my mom, and in my mind for the longest time, I didn't have a lot of Korean friends in the Bay Area growing up. And I really did think, oh, Korea is a combination of Chinese and Japanese culture. So I've got it. I don't need to learn it. But I know what it is.
But the reality is that Japanese stole a lot of culture from Korea.
Oh, yes. But they also stole from
China. So like a lot of the architecture and like even the geisha stuff is like actually Korean.
Oh, really? Well, they've all taken stuff from each other. I think Japan is so interesting because Japan was so like, I don't want to say evil, that's not the right word, but they were like, of imperial, whatever. They were a war country and they took, but then they did it. They adapted to their own culture so well. Yeah. Like Japanese art is so beautiful and it's its own thing, but it does take a lot from other cultures, but it's become its own thing.
Well, a lot of healing has happened between Korea and Japan recently, but back in the day, like my grandmother, for example. Mm-hmm. So when I did go to Korea, right? I learned chopsticks. I went to Korea.
Yeah.
And I was 11 or 12, and I learned so much. And basically, my grandmother, she hated, like, anything Japanese. So she wouldn't have any Japanese appliances. She wouldn't allow. And she had this whole theory that Japanese people were coming to Korea to steal, like, kimchi and kimchi recipes. This was, like, her thing. Like, she was really scared of it. I mean,
talk about appropriation. Yeah. Like, that is what the Asian countries are doing to each other, but this is also like wartime. So
because she grew up in a post, war culture and experienced it. And it's very, very real to them. That kind of feeling.
My grandpa was the same. He hated Japan. And I remember meeting a friend in college who was Korean, and she was saying, and she like hung out the K-Town crowd, so all her friends were Korean. And she's kind of just drunk saying this, not like totally being racist, but she was just saying like, the best Asians, it's Korea, China, and then Japan at the bottom. Yeah. But then I was like, that's so funny, because if you ask a Chinese person, they're like, China, Japan, Korea, or whatever. Like they're all like, put themselves first, and then depending on who they hate the most, they're just at the bottom.
Exactly. And then if you're I'm just kidding. I think there's a joke there. I think I've heard a joke before where it was like, and if you're Vietnamese, like, and it's a very racist joke. Oh, like, I don't even know. The punchline is very
Wong
racist.
Ali Wong talks about the jungle Asians. Her words.
I hate that shit because it's so stupid. And it's so like I feel like America is like the ultimate like bully and like fuckboy. Uh-huh. And it's like, are you seriously going to like go? You know what I mean? It's just so so misdirected.
Yeah. And there's been so much because there's so much history in there.
All your white listeners are like, click. Like, they're just like, what is this conversation? What is this?
Well,
this is so stupid.
I think it's, I mean, I can relate it back to America and appropriation, what we're talking about in modern day, too, because this is why I don't always jump immediately on the outrage train on the appropriation topic. I think clearly when you see something that feels like appropriation, it is like, and we all know what that is, frat boys making the like slanty eyes or whatever. Mm-hmm. That clearly is like, no, don't do that. But then there's like, there was like the girl who wore a qipao to her prom who genuinely was like, she was a pretty white blonde girl. So the picture didn't do her any favors. Yeah. But she genuinely, upon like reading more about it, seemed like she just really liked the dress, was really interested in Chinese culture. No malice, no hate. Like, that's a little trickier because I think people get mad because they see that and that triggers other people who are doing it for the wrong reasons. And so she's representing them. But actually, that to me speaks a little closer to like when we're talking about like Japan, the war part's bad, but then they came back and they really like this, you know, like what's shaved ice is originally from Taiwan. And now it's, there's a version of that in everything. Like bingsu in Korea, Japan has it, Philippines have it. And they've done cool things in their own countries with it. Like I love bingsu. It's different from mango shaved ice. But originally it started from them being like, we like this thing, so we're going to take it. And to me, that gets a little trickier because I don't really think that's appropriation. I think that there's for sure mixed feelings. Like if you lost a war, you can hate that country. But them taking the food and building on it is just a part of global, like global economy.
I think it's fascinating the difference between cultural appropriation and cultural appreciation and where that line is. And I think for me, at least in my brain, it's about like respect and self-awareness. Yeah. So if like you're self-aware and you know that this is controversial or that you know that some people might have feelings about it, but you still, because you do appreciate it so much or you have this connection to that culture, I feel like possibly there is a way for it to be okay, I think.
Yeah. You know? Well, I guess it's like, who are you hurting? And also you can just, you have to just accept that some people won't like it. You don't have to convince everyone.
Also like Selena, for me at least, like, okay, again, you know, canceled. I'm canceled. Also, my name is Nori, but you know, it's, which is a very Japanese name, but my name is Nori, but I just never, I just thought people would have like a hard time. And so I just like say it's like Nori, you know, like Nori.
Yeah,
Reed.
Like
Nori.
Yeah, like the.
Yeah, but Korean is Nori, you know, Nori is the Korean version of it. So maybe I'll change it. Who knows? But
don't change your name.
No, no. Nori is easier. But people always ask me, they're like, are you Japanese? Because it's, you know, to them, it is very Japanese. But when Selena Gomez did the Bindi, like she, this is a long time ago, she had an old song and she, the look for that song and that album was like Indian inspired.
Oh yeah.
Like
yeah.
when you're ready to come and get it. Da, 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 da. And then she does like the hand movements.
Yeah.
And people went crazy. People were so upset and like canceled and all that kind of stuff. And for me, it's like, you know, it's interesting when a person of color like appropriates from another culture of color. Like it, to me, it's like not as bad. It feels not as bad as like a white person. Because of history and because of like the dynamics of power.
I feel
like
but she power, is a pop star, so she definitely
she has
does
power.
Read. Yeah, she has power.
She's very light skinned. You know, it's like very, the politics of it are very interesting to me.
I feel like with that situation, I'm like, I'm not going to try to cancel. I don't think it's the worst thing in the world. I don't think it's great and I don't think it looks great. And I feel like someone should have made a better choice there. But like in the grand scheme of things, it's not malicious. Do I like it? No.
Mm-hmm.
But I, you know what's interesting with Asian cultures cross, like taking things and building off, I think is that they also then, there's a conversation, right? Like Japanese people might be like, oh, we have sushi, but we love Taiwanese beef noodle soup. And then Taiwanese people go to Japan and they love this. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't feel like there's one that's like, and once we take it, it's ours. Whereas white people, when they take it, I feel like they're like, oh, we found this gem and now it's ours and we're going to introduce it. Yes.
Yeah,
exactly. It's not like they're taking it, building it off of it and giving something else back.
Interesting.
There's no like conversation, I feel like.
Yes, it's not a conversation. I think that's a great way to look at it. Conversation versus like a monologue, right? Or, or stealing a speech. I don't like whatever.
Yes. Yeah.
It's not a back and forth.
Yeah.
Give and take.
Yeah. Well, okay, so you went to Korea, you appropriated the chopsticks. No.
You
learned how to use chopsticks. And this was sort of just, you wanted to be able to go there and just like fit in and know how to.
Yeah, because I was going to be, we're staying with our family, you know, we're staying with my mom's family and her brother, we stayed with her brother and he's a bitch. Like he's fucking like shady, super. He reminds me of like a drag queen. Like he was just so shady.
Okay.
And so I was encouraged by my mom to like learn how to use chopsticks so that
to like impress him.
Yeah, because he would like have, and it's funny because it, you know, apparently I didn't do a good enough job because they still thought it was bad. Even when I was using them, they're like, "That's weird." They're like, "That's a weird way to hold them. That's not the right way to do it."
Did you have cousins your age there?
They were not my age. I was 12, and they were probably in their 20s.
Okay,
but they were very sweet to me and very nice to me, and they kind of helped. But no one really spoke English in a real way, and so it was very kind of interesting that way.
How did it feel being there and immersed in that culture?
It was really hard because my mom actually traveled around a lot to see other family, and I would just stay at her brother's house.
Okay.
And I don't know if I mentioned this, but he's a bitch. Like he's very shady. And so I didn't really like, you know, I didn't really get along with him very well.
Uh-huh.
And he would just make fun of me like constantly, like shrimp. So basically in Korea, at least my lens is through him, so maybe it's just a crazy ass family. But they eat the shell. They don't oh. peel shrimp. They okay. eat because it's part of the experience. It's crunchy. It's flavor. I don't know. They just eat it.
You, like a boiled shrimp, not like fried.
Yeah. So if so, you fry it and then you.
Oh, but okay.
You
don't I've had fried shrimp with a shell on it.
Yeah, and they just eat it. They don't take the okay. shell off. They just eat it. And so I was peeling the shell off, and he was like, "What? What are you doing?" And I was like, "Oh, I'm peeling the shell." And he was just like, and then he just like started laughing. Aww. And so that's a very specific memory that I have. But I ended up just getting addicted to the internet cafes.
Okay.
Because that was the place I felt safe. Yeah. So I played, I don't know if, do you know Diablo?
The internet, very safe. Diablo, yes, I do remember
okay,
that.
So it's like pre-World of Warcraft. Yes, yeah. And I just got, addicted to Diablo because that was the only place I felt
You are
safe.
Rich. I feel like those places charge like up the wahoo.
Oh, it must, I must have spent at least $4,000. Like it was not okay.
Back when the internet was like a dollar a minute.
Or yeah,
something.
It was really bad. But when my mom got back, my brother, again, I can't stress this enough, just what a gossipy queen he is. He was just like, you know that your child was like, is addicted to the computer now. And this is just like so shady and gossipy.
You're like, excuse me.
So if you're out there, you know, uncle, just.
He's like a full grown man.
Full grown, shady, queen man. Kid. I think looking back, I wonder if he was gay because he was just, I mean, he was married to a woman and then he had kids, but he was just so like queeny. Mm. So a part of me is like, I think you.
He's trying to drag you. Huh? He was just trying to drag you because
I think
like,
he was dragging. He was reading me.
He
was dragging me. The library was open, and the computer cafe was also open, and I went there. Yeah.
The thing you said about the shrimp reminded me of something that I think is really interesting. That that kind of speaks to like this, like people making fun of stuff. Like Chinese people eat their beef like fully cooked. That's like how you eat it. Like, of course, if you go to a steakhouse. A Western steakhouse. I think the rich people know, but they treat it like foreign food, right? Mm. So they're like, this is how you eat it. Mm. But if they were to go to like a Chinese place and order steak, well done. It's always well done, like, which is wild to me growing up here because, you know, like medium rare, maybe. Like medium mm-hmm. rare, maybe medium, whatever. But like, I feel like if you go to a restaurant and you order your steak well done here, people are like, what the fuck?
Ooh, yeah.
But I think it's a cultural thing. And I didn't realize that till I've been back enough as an adult to be like, okay, that's just how they eat their beef here. That's just how they eat it. And to not cook your beef mm-hmm. seems unsanitary to them. And so they wouldn't do that.
Yeah.
And so when they come here, they also order it like that. And then people make fun of them. I've worked at restaurants too. I think in Black culture too, it's similar. Yeah. I can't speak too much to the specifics because I didn't grow up mm-hmm. in a Black household, but I worked at a restaurant and I remember like the servers would be like, why are they always ordering it well done? I'm like, it must be a cultural thing.
Yeah.
Because in Taiwan, it for sure is a cultural thing. And I've seen people make fun of Chinese people for that.
Yeah.
And I think that is where I feel like sometimes America does feel like a bully because it's not just being like, oh, interesting. That's different. Cool. It's like, that's different. Ha 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 ha. You
yeah.
suck.
Like we're the center of the world. We know what's right and this is wrong.
Kind yeah. of yeah. Like that sort of feeling. I'm like, where does that come from? It's so wild.
And it's so double, you know, it's so like double hypocrisy because it's like, not only are they making fun of people, they're also stealing
yes,
culture.
And then they take, and then they're so like, we are going to do fried rice better than you.
It's
and
so fucked up. Do you remember that, that white lady in New York who wanted to make clean
yes,
Chinese
oh
food?
My God.
Yeah, I think that the new SNL cast member, he's
oh,
a
yeah,
big
yeah.
fan.
He's a big fan of that place.
Huge fan of that place. Shane, what's his name?
Gillis.
Yeah, he loves that
yeah,
place.
Yeah, he loves the clean
loves
Chinese food.
Chinese food. No MSG. Yeah.
Yeah, no MSG.
None of that nasty, you know, Chinese
I wrote something. I was asked to write for Betches, where sometimes I write, because they kind of market to like sorority girls, but like a satirical piece about when that restaurant came out. And I think they were afraid to, they wanted to make fun of it, but they were afraid to touch it. So they're like, let's give it to a Chinese sorority girl who can like dance this line. And I don't even know if I did it right. I just wrote what I thought was funny. Mm-hmm. But to me, the funniest thing about white girls complaining that Chinese food isn't clean is like, they probably have only had bad Chinese food. Like, I'll be totally honest. I'm sure the places they go are not clean and are not good. But sorry that you don't know where the good shit is. I mean, talk about not being on the list. Like, if all you've ever had is like, literally like takeout hole in the wall places.
Yeah.
That stuff. I don't, that's not what I think of when I think of Chinese food, you know?
I mean, yeah. And I love a sorority girl who like snorts a line of Coke and then is
oh
like,
my God, right?
Like this Chinese food is
yeah,
not
she's
clean.
Definitely like been on the floor of a
yeah, you're
bar bathroom.
So
sucking a dick.
Your whole life is so clean.
Yeah, no, that's slut shaming, and I didn't. I meant more like being in a dirty bar bathroom, and I was like, what would you be doing on the floor?
Yeah. But
you could be doing your makeup on the floor. And I'm not even drug shaming either.
I'm just saying that it's very hypocritical.
It's hypocritical. Yeah.
Yes, it's a bit picking and choosing, yes. Kind of like what is clean and what is not clean in your life.
Yeah, it's you like whenever we used to go to music festivals and there'd be girls who were like super, super like vegan, like healthy lifestyle, but then they're like doing a shit ton of ecstasy, and I'm like, okay, well, you know, that's like way worse for you than any of the meat that you're eating.
Literally, like it's a little to me that is whiteness, and just like I can't, you
know,
I really can't. Yeah.
Oh man.
And MSG, you know, I think science has like even shown that MSG like is not bad. It's not any worse for you than salt. It's literally just salt.
It's all been proven that the guy who wrote that journal, like it's been disproven.
Yeah.
But it doesn't matter to them. I don't think people who are racist are rooted in facts. They're just rooted in feelings. And
they chose the nastiest letters to. They're like MSG.
Madison Square Garden.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Coincidence.
Oracle, you know, like that's a better team. You know.
Listen. No coincidence there. I smell conspiracy, and I just saying. Yeah.
Okay. Wait. So I want to continue about your trip.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Was there more about the trip, or then you came back and what happened?
Well, I was in Korea for a month.
Okay.
Like it was a long trip.
Did you feel like, I guess, were you feeling like you were like accepting your culture and this was a new awakening, or were you like, this is good, I'm done, I'm going to go back?
I stayed with my other uncle.
Okay.
Okay. So like first
he
was great.
Okay.
So I had this first uncle that was like a bitch and mean and like kind of sassy and rude. And I stayed with this other uncle who was like quiet and just like, we just did not even talk. Like there was just no talking. I would just follow him around. He would take me to places, and then we would eat at these different places.
Uh-huh.
And it was delicious. We went to this there's this town in Korea that's famous for seafood.
Okay.
I can't remember what the name is. Busan. I did. Okay. I just did it.
Oh,
it's
my God.
Busan.
You did it. Congrats.
Oh, my God. Thank you. Thank you, everyone. And it was such a fun trip because, like, you know, it was like he was showing me all the fish and how they like cut it. And it was just like a really fun kind of like educational. And then we would eat all the food. And he like loved Michael Jackson. Like he was obsessed. God.
Cancel him. No.
I know. I'm just like, I feel like, listen.
Different times. We all did. We all. Yeah. It's okay. We all loved him.
This little segue, but I have been having Hollywood meetings for the first time this week.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's teaching me I have no chill. Because like within the first minute, I'm like, Louis C.K., like, let's talk about it. And they're just like,
and they're
what?
You don't know what to say. Yeah.
I literally went to like, you know, this production company and talked about like climate change. And they were just like, we don't want to like think about that right now. So like, can you like please stop? Like, they're like, let's talk about Ariana Grande.
Like, listen, I got a Tesla. So
yeah,
it's good. I've done my part.
Exactly. Oh, but I hope the listeners know I'm very poor. Like I'm not, this is a bit, it's a joke. I actually do not have any money.
Wow. But no, but you walked in here with like a American Express. I don't even know what's the black card. Platinum was, I just gave away that
diamond.
I'm not rich. Yeah. You walked
the
in with a blinging card and
yeah.
you waved it in my face and you went, here.
I did. No, I'm staying in a Koreatown, like fucking like poor black. Anyway, so I'm just kidding.
So you got to see all this culture.
So much culture.
Was it? So were you meeting people your age? I feel like that's
no.
That's the loneliest part about going to Asia. I have a twin sister, so we used to have each other. But whenever the like kids had to like go back for the holidays or for the summer, it was. We always would be like, I'm bored. It was boring because your friends aren't there and your kids your age aren't there. But
well, speaking of kids, I was talking about Michael Jackson. So basically, my uncle like loved Michael Jackson.
Great segue.
And, I know. Thank you so much. You're probably gonna edit that out. So basically, he took me to this one place and they made really good bibimbap.
Okay.
And it was they like did the stone pot and it was like really good and stuff. And he was just like, my mom was there for that visit. And so she was translating and he was like, oh, like Michael Jackson came to this restaurant and they gave him bibimbap and he loved it. And he like loved the bibimbap and he was just his face like because, again, stone cold, no emotion, super just this like cowboy of like a Korean man.
Yeah.
And his whole face lit up when he was talking about Michael Jackson eating this bibimbap. And I thought that was so funny. Like, that's, even then, I was just like, this is so funny.
That's so fun. Like, yeah. Watching, like, sort of what makes it. Like, obviously, Michael Jackson's worldwide popular, but when you actually see it affecting someone in a different country, it's cool.
And I just remembered that there was one family gathering where there were cousins who were younger than me. So I was 12, and they must have been, what, 10 or, like, 9 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And they were boys. And I remember them being like, hamburger. Like, that's all they would be like, hamburger.
Hamburger.
And I would say, and I'd be like, yes. And they'd be like, yeah, hamburger, I like.
Aww.
And I would be like, oh, that's great. I was like, bip, bim, bop. I was like, I like. And then Michael Jackson came out of nowhere. Oh, sorry. God, I'm so sorry. But no, they'd be like, and then my favorite one, though, of this, like, one word kind of thing was one goes, Matrix. And I was like, oh, Matrix. I was like, yeah, Matrix. Like, cool. Yeah. Wait, was Matrix out then?
Yeah, it was like, what, 2003? Wait. When was it? No, earlier than that, 90s, right?
So, yes, it was Matrix. I was like, fuck, did I mix up a memory? No.
No,
it was Matrix.
99.
It was. Ding, ding, ding.
And then you guys just did the backward bend.
Yes. No, he did. I swear to God, he did. He did the backward bend. And I was like, yeah, cool, Matrix. And then the other one was pizza.
Aww.
Pizza. So food, I guess, is
the real connecting
factor. And that guy, Keanu Reeves. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
He's
part Asian.
He's, yeah. And it's Korean? Japanese.
Oh, maybe. You know, like, this is how when I was growing up, he didn't read to me as Asian.
Yeah.
At all.
Yeah.
But now I'm
by
like,
design.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, but
they did that on purpose, right?
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
I think it's Korean. I think, well, Fred Armisen is part Korean.
Oh, okay.
Which is really interesting.
Rob Schneider's like a quarter Filipino.
Yeah. I know. And Hollywood wants to hide those facts.
But
people.
He's done Yellowface. Is That's it called true. Yellowface? If, he's
if you're
doing
part
it?
Yellow. Yeah.
I think it's the way it's done. Do you know what I mean? It's like, if I dressed up like that, it would still be Yellowface. Mm-hmm. And I'm full yellow.
Yeah. You're full yellow.
I'm full yellow.
And I mean, with blonde hair, you are.
I'm fully
full
yellow.
Yeah.
Even my hair is doing yellow face.
I feel like yellow is such a funny color to ascribe Asian people. Like, why was it yellow?
Is
there history to this?
Yeah, I think there is, and I might be totally wrong. So please drag me if I am. But I think it has something to do with with the opium and stuff. Like,
oh.
So white people said like, because your skin gets yellow. I may be totally wrong. They might just be fully racist and wanting to pick a different color.
Yeah.
But like,
they're just
I think
out.
It has to do with either opium or some sort of disease or something. And that's why they said that. But I remember that song. Oh, speaking of Christian songs, that God, Jesus loves the little children.
Yeah.
That one. And in it, they go like, red and yellow, black and white, all the children in a sight.
Oh
Jesus
my God.
Jesus loves the children of the world.
Oh my God. I'd like completely blacked out.
I
didn't realize
every
that.
Day.
Whoa.
And one time I asked my teacher, I was like, who's yellow? And she was like, you are.
Oh my God. Oh my God. That's amazing.
Yeah, so.
Wow.
So yeah, that was my experience in a Christian kindergarten.
Wow. That is just... That's incredible. That's truly incredible.
It's like, I am? Oh, yeah, that's a racist song. I hope they're not singing that anymore.
Yeah, they are.
They
probably.
For sure are. Yeah. In Christian County,
where
for
I'm
sure.
From, I completely was like, wow, I remember that song. Yeah.
Yeah, that's
oh my God.
Funny. How did this, okay, let's skip a little ahead. So how did this affect you growing up? Because you obviously like got out of there and you went to college and are in the Bay where there's plenty of Asian people and you know you're more in touch with your roots now. What was that journey like? Like, did you have a moment where you're like, I really need to learn more, or were you just kind of like, all right, that's in the back of my head, I'll internalize that?
100% yes. So basically I went from Kenyon College to New York. In New York, I really didn't have any Korean kind of connection. Like, the most was I would go to Koreatown and maybe get Korean food when my brother would come or something like that. But when I moved to Oakland, I really truly like intentionally sought out Korean community.
Yeah.
And what's so amazing about the Bay Area is that they do have these like pockets of really niche kind of like groups of people. And so there actually was this like queer and trans Korean drumming group.
Oh my gosh.
Where they do indigenous Korean drumming.
Awesome. Oh, it's like the backflip where they do the backflip
Pungmul.
And stuff. Yes, I've seen that.
Pungmul. Awesome. Yeah, Pungmul is Korean drumming. And that was such a wonderful healing experience to kind of like be with this group of people. Because Korean people are actually really homophobic and just because of Western influence and missionaries. And there's, I mean, I'm sure there's all these different cultural factors.
Asian.
Yeah. But yeah, they're very outwardly homophobic, and there's not a lot of visible queer culture in Korea. Mm-hmm. And so it was just really cool to be with these people who, some of them are full, some of mm-hmm. them were mixed like me, some of them were first gen, second gen. It was just a great, cool group of people who were kind of reclaiming their like Korean identity.
Yeah.
So that was really, it was awesome.
That's so cool. I've had a similar experience when I went to NYU, because I grew up in the Bay, so very much surrounded by Asian people. But I felt a culture shock being in New York, because I felt like I was always part of the mainstream in my school. Like, there were so many Asian people, I didn't feel like we had to separate. And in New York, at NYU, there were people who came from small towns who flocked to the Asian student unions. Mm. And then me not being a part of them, I felt like I was like in this weird middle ground. So then I started missing like Asian culture and being around it. So then I also did that. I like sought out, to the point where I almost felt like I was like sort of fetishizing my own culture, where I was like, ooh, a Chinese group. And they're way more Chinese than me. And then I'd like really jump in and be like, I'm Chinese too. Hey guys. But I didn't feel like I really was as much as they were.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like, excuse me, in the Korean group, there also was some pain, because it did wake up that, because there was this, unfortunately, there was this unspoken hierarchy of like people who are first gen and speak Korean fluently, who, so the more access you have to the culture, I felt like the more they like had a stake in the group. And so I did feel almost insecure about just kind of my lack of Korean culture. And so it was kind of like not knowing how to use chopsticks like all over again, you know?
Oh man.
So yeah, I feel like there was also, and like you said about like the fetishization or whatever that was, like for me, how I relate to that is that it was really important to me, and it had a very important place in my life. But after a while, it became less important.
Yeah.
Right? Because I was healing that wound. I was able to kind of face some things I needed to face. And then I just had a desire to maybe have friendships and relationships that weren't just based on identity. You know what I mean?
I know what you mean.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like I feel like that with first moving to LA and coming out too, because I was like questioning in college, but and then I came out as bi, but I didn't have a lot of like queer female friends. I had plenty of gay friends in New York.
As everyone does.
Yeah. But I wasn't in that community at all. And then LA, I don't know if it's just that I just wasn't a part of those groups, but in LA, I felt like it was so much easier for me to meet queer women. Mm-hmm. And so I felt like for a while, I only wanted to hang out in those groups. And I was like, let's all go out. Let's just go to a gay bar and pick up chicks. And it was like, well, it's not like, this isn't what I do normally. Yeah. I'm only doing it because I'm trying to like embed myself in and feel secure in a community.
I think there's such an importance to sharing experiences with people and having common experiences. And that is important. I also think that it's important to go outside of your experiences and meet people and have relationships with people who aren't like you. And again, I'm putting no value on it. I'm not saying one is better than the other one. I'm just saying that it's important for me at least to have like a balance of that. Yeah.
That's awesome. My mom said she didn't learn how to use chopsticks like formally. Like she, I mean, she obviously knew how to use them, but the proper form till right before she got married, because when you get married in Taiwan, like, you know, you have to eat in front of at this big banquet table in front of everyone, and they watch your form and to decide if you're gonna be whatever a good mother
a
good
intense
wife.
Intense people.
Yeah, like she used it functionally, and then she before her wedding practiced to get the form right, and she told me that, and then I remember her telling me that, and I was like, do I do it right? She's like, no, and so I just never learned how to. Yeah. I mean, I like use them. They're easy for me to use functionally, but I know that my form is wrong.
Yeah. It's just funny how intense we are as as Asian people. It's just like, what the fuck? Like a wedding is about like making judging the bride as much as possible.
Eat. Oh my God. I don't know if it's because I watched We Got Married, which is always a Korean show where they put two celebrities together and made them quote unquote get married and live together for a week. And in the one I watched, Ga-in from Brown Eyed Girls.
Oh,
isn't it?
I'm a terrible.
Oh,
it's
okay. She's just a pop star, but she says part of the tradition is you have to cut fruit for your in-laws, and then they judge how well you cut fruit.
Oh my God.
And so I remember that, but she did it very badly because she was like a notoriously kind of just like a bad babe kind of thing.
Yeah.
And so it was funny, but she was like, I can't fucking cut this fruit. And they were like, God, you're a bad wife. Yeah. She's like, I don't care, bitch. I'm famous.
I love that. I feel like such, earlier you were joking about me being a rebel or whatever. And it's like, I really, truly am like, such a bad Korean in like every way possible. Like I'm queer. I'm like, you know, lazy. I'm, you know, I'm not lazy. I'm just saying like to their eyes, like I would be lazy, you know, like I'm not pursuing something like very academic or it's just funny how in every area of my life I have like disappointed my Koreanness. If my uncle was around, he would just be like, girl, like you, like,
but they probably like the thing people don't say is they probably secretly all want to break out of that thing. And so if anything, you're actually doing more by sort of being a pioneer and like being on the forefront of art.
Will you be my manager?
Yes, I'm very good at yeah, I've brought you here, Nori, today to tell you. This is actually a Hollywood meeting. Is this a meeting? This is a general.
Oh my God. You never know. That's what's funny about generals is you don't know if it's a general. I love it.
Don't know if it's a general. Don't know if it's a date. Don't know if it's a pitch. You just never know.
When they were preparing me for the generals, they were like, it's just like dating.
Oh my gosh, that's like, the worst advice.
Yeah, and I was like, oh, it's the thing I'm like the worst at. Like, thank you so much. The thing that I like have no competency to see over in my life is the thing that this is like, great.
Dating awesome. Is like a terrible comparison because I feel like in dating is the most unsure when you're like, it's so much about so both bad. Of you. Like you both have to make your decision, but also it's like, you know, it's all about like sort of being like, all right, where is this going to go? But yeah. I feel like there's no confidence there. You got to go in a meeting and be like, no, this is about me telling you what's up.
yeah I mean it's a God, I can't. I'm like, great, I'm just gonna get ghosted.
Oh no.
And then like, or you're gonna call me and be like, I just actually got back with my other client. You know, like it's like, this is not what I want.
Oh gosh. Well, but Hollywood meetings. I don't remember. Oh, what was I? Oh, about being a rebel.
Yeah.
I've noticed more and more like, and that's probably because we're both in the arts and in comedy, but like there are way more Asian people in comedy and entertainment and like who have had the similar experience of growing up Asian American and being in sort of like in between worlds and now are old enough to talk about it and write about it and create art. And I think that's really cool. I don't think that's something I felt like I had any access to growing up. And so I do think this is a new wave of like maybe the thing that people are going to want their kids to get into is like, why can't you be more like Ali Wong? Like,
right. Or Bo Niang.
Go on stage. Yeah.
It's like, look at Bo Niang. He's, you know, it's, I think it is cool. I wonder, that's a really interesting question. Like if that will be changing.
Well, if a kid's like, I want to be a doctor, the parents can be disappointed. Like, yeah. Really? You're just going to follow the pack and be a doctor?
It's like, you're just going to be straight. You're straight? Oh. Disgusting. Yeah, straight Asian.
I don't want a straight child.
Gross.
Ugh. Well, thank you so much for sharing that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Did we miss anything in your chopstick story?
No, I don't. I mean, I don't think so. I think that, you know, I'm healed. I've been able to integrate all parts of myself.
You're staying in Koreatown.
I'm in Koreatown now, and I think I'm...
Do you celebrate like Korean holidays? Do you guys have like...
Oh, we just had Chuseok. Like Chuseok just
happened.
Was
that Mid-Autumn Festival?
I think it was the moon. Yeah, full moon festival. It did just happen.
Yes, I did. It was not, like yesterday. No,
I had a Korean... I did have... I went to Korean barbecue. Oh,
okay.
Yeah,
there you
so
go.
Look at God. I did that.
I love that there's it's the same holiday, but it's totally different name, but it's probably similar. It's like celebrating the full harvest moon.
Yeah, I went to a really good Korean barbecue yesterday.
Well,
so
there you go.
There you go.
Harvest... something to do with having abundance, and you had an abundance of Korean barbecue.
Yeah.
Well, thanks so much for sharing that.
Of course.
That's the end of this pod, Nori. So is there anything you would like to promote?
Yeah. I mean, let's see, myself.
Mm-hmm. Where can people follow you yourself?
Yeah. I live in Instagram. That's where I live.
Yeah.
And
you've got a great gram.
It's my name. It's Nori Reed. Great content, you know, just really good. My uncle's just all over it. I'm just kidding.
Michael Jackson
loves the
From the Dead.
So just Instagram, just follow me there, you know.
Cool. And you can follow this podcast at Tell Me Anything Pod, or you can follow me at Larissa T. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Goodbye.